This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
February 2009, a 24-year-old worker, Sam Fitzpatrick, was crushed to death by a huge boulder. He was working on a construction site at Toba Inlet, just north of Powell River in British Columbia. His employer was Kiewit, one of the world's largest construction companies. A WorkSafe BC inspector later reported that Kiewit was reckless and grossly negligent in Sam Fitzpatrick's death. Sam's father, Brian Fitzpatrick, finds that judgment by itself woefully short of justice for the homicide of his son. Brian Fitzpatrick is a retired logger and now works as a heavy equipment operator, and he's joined me in the studio to explain what is necessary for just remedy that will save workers' lives. Thank you for coming in, Brian. It's painful, I know, to deal with the subject of one's son's death, an unnecessary death, but I hope you'll share with us what you understand was happening that resulted at the work site in Sam's death.
Well, there were a lot of things happening at the work site which weren't acceptable, you know, for WCB or just from a common sense point of view. The biggest issue, of course, is what relates directly to Sam, is that the rock scaling, which is a requirement on a steep, rocky slope, when you do blasting, there's lots of pieces of rock, large rock, little rock, that need to be dealt with because they haven't, you know, just all rolled down the hill and behaved themselves. So the company didn't want to spend the amount of time and money on the, what it would take to do proper rock scaling. Some of the rocks, you know, they have to be bolted because they're just too big and they're going to be, they're loose, and so you secure them, you drill in, you put in big long rock bolts, and it's quite a process. It takes time, it takes money. And Kiewit had no intentions of spending any money, any more than they had to on the rock program. They were required by law and even their own policies to do proper rock scaling, and they had no program in place other than just whatever they felt was necessary, which isn't good enough. Their geotech people had told them, you must rock scale this entire site, which was a steep mountainside, which was going to carry the penstocks, the big pipes down the hill to the turbine. So, you know, we're talking maybe half a mile or more of up on about a 40-degree, 30-degree slope. So we got a long stretch there where if a rock got rolling, it could just keep right on going. And indeed, that is what happened. And the geotech told them that you must rock scale this perfectly from the top to the bottom and before you start. Or as you proceed, you know, you blast, then you rock scale, you blast, you rock scale. You don't just keep sloughing it off. And my two boys, Arlen and Sam, were the official rock scalers. And so they knew only too well if things were safe or not safe. And the company just refused to do it, essentially. And eventually, what killed Sam was lack of rock scaling. And the incredible WorkSafe investigator, Barbara Deshane, I can never say enough good about her. She just got on him like ugly on an ape, aren't I? And they finally admitted the rock scaling was insufficient. And I thought that was a victory because they were tough people to deal with.
So when, going back to the accident site, when that boulder rolled down and Sam was crushed by it below where it should have been scaled, I understand that some WorkSafe BC people came and some RCMP people came to that site.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about why they came and what they found or didn't find.
Yes, well, the The day, I want to just jump back one little step here. The day before Sam was killed, another pickup-sized rock had come down the hill due to an excavator activity up above the crew working below. I don't know how far you have to go in school till you realize this is not a good idea to have machinery working above people below on a steep, rocky mountainside. But anyway, there was a shutdown safety meeting, and then it was once again reiterated, okay, no more machinery working above the crews below. And Sam suggested that there should be some more scaling done, and that was shot down. And they wouldn't even agree to do site-specific scaling, as in where workers would be working below a certain area where it hadn't been totally scaled. The management weren't even willing to send people up there to say, okay, we got to take care of this. This doesn't look good for people to be below. So the next day, Sam and Arlen don't want to work where they were told to work because they are the scalers, and they said, it's not safe there, and we need to do more scaling. And the company said, no, and so Arlen was told to go and see the earthwork superintendent, Jerry Cargella, and Arlen didn't do that. And I asked Arlen, why didn't you talk to Jerry? And Arlen said, I work for Kiewit myself, not on that job, but other jobs, and I knew Jerry Cargella. And Arlen said, Dad, you know he would have fired me. And I know he would have, because he was transferred to the Toba job for firing people on the West Vancouver job who wouldn't do unsafe things. He fired 8 people one day because they wouldn't risk their lives for him. So they transferred him. So then the next day when Sam was, they go back to work doing something where they didn't want to be drilling rock by hand. When they were, the plan was actually to use the big powerful drills, but somehow it got kind of screwed up and they could not get out of it. Arlen was afraid of being fired, and Sam as well. So they went ahead and the rock, a rock came down, but there were 2 excavators working above them that day after only less than a day earlier. It just defies all common sense or care. That's what I'm looking for. People. Yeah, I think Kiewit. My attitude when I worked for Kiewit, I worked as a logger for years, and I worked for Ledcor, the construction company, for a number of projects, and they were wonderful to work for, and there was never any issues. And when I first went on a Kiewit site, I remember thinking, "There's something not right about this place. There's too many big signs up saying, safety, safety." I'm going, they're trying to sell me on the safety. And eventually, as time went by, I realized that Kiewit sort of regarded workers as kind of a nuisance, kind of a necessary nuisance. I mean, we were never really in the club. We were just sort of like the pink things that make the machinery run, and depending on your skin color, I guess. But it was not a good feeling. And then I eventually quit because of an accident which nearly killed me. And so that day that the RCMP and the investigating officer for WorkSafe showed up, the day after Sam was killed, they got in around 10 that morning, the day after he was killed at 1 o'clock. And the investigating officer went to the camp and said, are there any people here in authority that I may speak to as to regards to what happened yesterday? And the people said, no, there's nobody here. The only person left is Mike Ladd, who is a foreman, an earthworks foreman, and also one of the guys running one of the excavators above the boys that day. And all the other crew had been flown out. The entire site had been emptied of people who were witnesses and knew something. So they removed the witnesses, and they broke their own safety rules doing that. And they even bypassed the orders of the day before not to put excavators up the hill above workers again. So Barbara's, and they said, well, Barbara Deschain is the investigating officer, and the Kiewit personnel who were in camp said, well, Mr. Ladd isn't feeling well. He's in, because of the accident, and he doesn't want to speak to you. And Barbara said, well, he has to speak to me. So she got Mike to take her out to where the other excavator operator, who was the eyewitness to this rock, he's not in camp because he's beetled off. And Mike is doing his best, and he's saying, well, as far as I can tell, this is where Jesse Taylor, the other operator, said the rock came from, and it was right near the forest over in one side of the worksite. And Barbara wisely said to the policeman, let's take a look there to make sure nothing rolled out of the woods. And they took a look to see if a rock had maybe dislodged from somewhere off the job site, and nothing of the sort happened. There was no evidence of a rock trail through the bush, which would have been substantial. And so they made a note of that. And while Barbara was resting after that steep climb, she leaned on a rock about shoulder height, and it started to move. So they soon got themselves out of there. And so Barbara said that the entire site was a mess. It was just a sea of loose rocks and logs and from logging and debris, and it was, you know, it was just not good. So as they are leaving, the four RCMP and Barbara, they see the earthworks superintendent, Jerry Carjala, the guy who is responsible for this site being such a mess, the guy who got transferred to Toba for firing people at West Van for not doing, because they refused to do unsafe stuff. He appears. He walks between some buildings. They're about to hop on the boat to leave, and there's Jerry Carjala. And you know what really annoys me? And I said, well, did you go over to Mr. Carjala and ask him, like, where have you been? Why are you hiding from me? You know we're here. And she said, no, I can't do that. It's not in the act. I'm not allowed to. I said, what about the four RCMP officers? Oh, it's not their jurisdiction. And I'm thinking Keystone Cops, you know, like this is, did we win the war? I mean, what's going on here? And so eventually I heard a rumor that Carjala was hiding because he's an American. And in America, you can sue your employer if you get badly injured or whatever. You can't do it in Canada. You cannot sue your employer for being hurt on the job in Canada. And Carjala thought that he would be arrested for manslaughter, as he probably would have been in the United States. And the next day, he's winging his way home to Montana.
So we're dealing with a situation where the WCB has no jurisdiction, the police have no jurisdiction.
To arrest people.
To arrest.
Yeah. And well, the police have, but when the police are on a work site, it's WCB's jurisdiction.
So there's something called the Westray Law, which was passed the beginning of the century because of
disaster. 20 years ago.
20 years ago, yeah. Okay, a mine disaster,
yes.
in the Maritimes.
That's right.
And that particular Westray Law supposedly was to make employers criminally responsible for deaths and injuries,
yeah,
of workers. So why can't you use the Westray Law?
Well, I have my own theory on that, and I've talked to lawyers, and the lawyers, being lawyers, concerning themselves with the law and being real serious types, they say the law isn't tough enough. And I read the law, and I'm just an old logger, and I read the law, and I said, well, that seems as clear as anything I've seen on a parking meter. It says, don't park here. There's nothing ambiguous about that to me. And when I read what was added to the current Criminal Code of Canada with the Westray amendments of Bill C-45, it looked to me like this was as clear as it could be. If you are guilty of reckless disregard resulting in death, then you've committed a culpable crime called manslaughter, a form of murder without intent or malice, and you're subject to a maximum of 25 years in prison. And if you pull up to a parking meter and it says 2-hour parking, come out 3 hours later and you got a ticket, are you surprised? No. But how come on a very essential item like this, there's all this? So I have another theory on this, and I've talked to several people about it. Because the big deal is prosecutors don't seem to want to lay charges, and there have been a few cases tried, one of them very strenuously with United Steelworkers against Weyerhaeuser. They got nowhere. The judge finally stayed the case, finally. And I say this, WorkSafe, Workers' Compensation Board, has the authority, the legislative authority, to essentially immunize industry, employers, from the Criminal Code of Canada. Now, you can take them to court if you like, or if you've got the money. you're going to spend $500,000 on a lawyer and you're going to get a $25,000 settlement from the judge. It doesn't make any sense. And I talked to another lawyer who I'd love to name because I just admire the guy so much. And I was saying, well, listen, my son has lost his life. He's been killed on the job through reckless disregard. It's as good, almost short of just putting a gun to his head. Is there no consideration for him? He didn't go to work that morning knowing, thinking he was going to die. He never signed on with these people to be killed. And the lawyer looked at me, and it was, I could see it was bothering him. He said, Brian, I hate to tell you this, but, and I've had to tell some people, but in Canada, your son's life has no value under law. Nothing.
So hundreds, if not thousands, of workers have been killed.
8,000.
Since the 8,000 since the Westray law came in. And there's been, one case carried, or there may be.
There may be one. There are other people, Jim Sinclair or Stephen Hunt of the USW, they could tell you for sure. But it's like 8,000 workers have been injured or killed, and now it's not all due to reckless disregard on the part of the employer. Sometimes you go to work and you do something stupid, and you pay for it, and it's an accident, or however. But the job that Sam and Arlen were on, the working conditions were reckless, exhibiting reckless disregard, willful reckless disregard, as the WCAT committee put it, for a year and a half. It wasn't just a, whoops, we made a mistake there, or wow, we didn't see that. This was willful for over a year of subjecting about 100 guys to fatal situations on a daily basis. After that safety meeting from the rock the day before Sam was killed, the rock that rolled down the hill, every morning you go to work, you sign a job hazard awareness thing, which is sort of, it's good, but does really take the company off the hook. And one of the, it said, watch out for falling rock. That was their way to deal with this issue.
Yeah, you were part of a group that met some BC cabinet ministers about the death of workers on the job site. It included people whose family had been killed in motor vehicle transport to the farm fields.
That's right.
And you presented a proposal to the government on a way that could make that bring that Westray law into real live action, to be a real requirement. What was that you wanted, and what was the government minister's response?
Well, it was an idea brought forward to it was an idea brought forward by Jim Sinclair, I believe, of the BC Fed, to have a special prosecutor who could deal with, who be knowledgeable of work site work requirements for safety issues, and because a lot of people don't know. And you've got to be trained in this, and that's where the WCB shine. We actually need more WCB. We need them to get a bigger budget. I even suggested to the Minister of Labor that she hire, that the WCB be required to hire skydivers to be inspectors so that they would be able to jump in, and instead of phoning up an employer saying, we're going to be there next week, get your house in order, in other words. But what was required was a special prosecutor. So then the, I believe it was, I can't recall, the deputy minister of justice or some high-ranking fellow. I did read what did come back from that request, and apparently we have one of these people already on the payroll. We've never heard of him. I don't think he's ever processed a case. I mean, as a logger, I can tell you, if I never processed a tree, I was out of a job. I mean, I don't know how we can have a special prosecutor no one ever heard of, but we do. So that was the response. And, of course, that's not going to work. What we have to do, and I was trying to get to this a moment ago, what we need to do in this province is take the legislative authority of the Workers' Compensation Board away from them, which prevents workers and families from suing a recklessly negligent employer. The WCB should be concerned solely with safety, and let the police deal with crime. And when you're injured because of reckless disregard for your life, that is a crime. Let the police deal with that. And police need to mesh with WCB and start making... Why, since 1907, you have not been able to sue an employer in this country for being killed on the job, basically, if through no fault of your own. Right. In the United States, they've been doing it since 1900. Our former enemies, Germany and Japan, have been doing it for about 150 years. And many other countries. In France, like Jerry Cargiella, he just said, I didn't want to see those cops because I figured they'd slap the cuffs on me, like they would have done at home in the United States.
You're going to continue pursuing this.
Oh, yeah, we're just warming up. Don't worry about that part. We're not giving this up. There's too many other Sams out there that need some real coverage.
Well, thanks a lot, Brian, for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
May I really have success in this fight for justice for workers that'll hold employers accountable for workplace deaths.
Thanks very much. I appreciate the opportunity here.
My guest has been Brian Fitzpatrick, his father of Sam Fitzpatrick, who was killed on the worksite at Toba Inlet due to the reckless and gross negligence of Kiewit Construction. If you'd like more information, you can go to our website for a link to an April 8th article. That article is published in the Tai magazine, and it was written by Tom Sanborn.
This podcast was produced by the Red Eye Collective in Vancouver, BC. If you live in the Vancouver area and are interested in creating alternative radio with us, we'd love to hear from you. Contact us at redeye@cooperadio.org.